So we talked about Matthew for a few weeks. We're going to switch gears tonight, and for the next couple weeks, we're going to look at some things surrounding the birth of Jesus, because we're going into the Christmas season, and so we're going to start tonight, and it'll culminate on our big Christmas bash we're going to do on December 15th, so you don't want to miss that. We're combined that week. We're going to look at Isaiah 9:6 tonight. Isaiah 9:6. There's a story I read. I was reading a book, and it was on Christmas, and the author shared this story about this little girl, and she went to school, and her teacher, they were singing, they were learning Christmas carols, because it was Christmas season, so they're singing all the carols. You guys know Silent Night, right? Oh. Yeah, sing it. Okay, maybe that's enough. That was good for now. We can continue it. Beautiful rendition of Silent Night. So they're singing Silent Night. I think it was Silent Night. And the teacher said, okay, this is what I want you to do now. I want you to take out a piece of paper and take your crayons, and I want you to draw out, based on what Silent Night says, draw out the story of Christmas. So, no, that's what the teacher told the little kids. And so these little kids start drawing, and they're all happy, and they're proud of their pictures. And this one little girl takes her picture home, and she gives it to her mom, and her mom said, oh, yeah, that's beautiful. And she put, you know how moms do, like, oh, yeah, that's great. And so she takes a magnet, big old magnet with a face on it, and she, like, puts it on the fridge, you know, and it's up on there, and the little girl's looking at it, like, ah, you know, all proud of her picture. You guys do that ever?
Yeah.
Yeah, you get stuff all over your fridges.
It
was kind of rhetorical, but I'm glad for the long answer. And so she's got her picture on thing, and so her mom's looking at it, and she's like, okay, this is a really beautiful picture. I love what you've done here. But can you explain one thing to me? She says, what?
What is it?
No, she knew what it was.
What, yeah, what exactly did she draw?
You know what she drew? She drew an airplane. And so the mom's going, why have you drawn an airplane to picture Silent Night and the story of Jesus? Well, do you guys know what the story of Jesus is? When he was born, an angel came down, and what did he tell them as a warning? What did Mary and Joseph have to do? Because Herod was going to go kill the babies. Yeah, take a flight to Egypt. They had to fly out of there to Egypt. So that's them, they're flying away. That's Mary and Joseph and the little baby, and they're on the back of a plane, and they're taking their flight to Egypt. And they're taking off, and she's looking, and he's like, well, who's the big fat guy in the front? And he's like, no, that's Pontius, the pilot. You know, he's the pilot of the plane. And so he's up there flying, and the mom's going, you know, I don't think you got the story quite right, but she didn't want to tell her daughter. And so the little girl's standing, she's all proud of her picture. And you know what I thought? Have you guys ever done that, like, when you say, I don't know, when I sing the ABCs song, I always thought, like, L-M-N-O-P was, like, one letter. You ever think that? Like, L-M-N-O-P, which one's L-M-N-O-P? I've never found it before. But, like, and you sing songs, and you kind of, like, misinterpret what the song's actually saying, and you think it's something else. Have you ever done that?
Yes.
There's probably a million examples we can use.
That's my dad.
It's your dad? He does that a lot? People do that. And you know what else we do that with? Sometimes we do that with things like Christmas and the Bible and things in our lives. And so when we think about Christmas, there's a lot of times where what we see over here, we see a Christmas tree and we see beautiful things on it and it's all pretty, and it's that crazy thing that I don't know what it is or why it's there. See, I told you they did that. They used the tree skirt. Sorry, okay. So we see all this stuff and we see a snowman and we see all this, and we get distracted by all of the things that we kind of think Christmas is about. And when I say Christmas to you, the first thing that probably pops in your mind is, oh, yeah, presents, like sweet Wii controller from a new Wii, and then the cool game, the hunting game, and the, what?
Christmas,
you're right.
Exactly.
I thought you said a Christ mask. I was like, you wear those at Christmas? That's kind of weird. So we get distracted. And so tonight, I want us to kind of get back to the roots. Why do we even celebrate Christmas? What's the point of this? And, well, hopefully I'll answer that for you tonight. But you hold on to it and see if we come up with the same conclusion, okay? And so let's look at this. First of all, do you guys know that Christmas, or the birth of Jesus, which is what we celebrate, right, was foretold about up to 1,000 years before he ever even came? There are prophecies about him that said he would come exactly how he came. Let me read you a couple of them. How do we know? Because we have the books still written that were written 1,000 years before he ever even got here, and they're like, this is how he's going to come? And he came that way. It's like, whoa, what?
Isaiah 9:6.
Oh, Isaiah 9, yeah, that's what we're looking at tonight. So good, yes. You probably just heard me say that 5 minutes ago, but that's okay. We'll use that. Oh, good. All right, I'm glad you're studying that. Well, Isaiah 7:14 is another one. Listen to what it says. Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and will call his name Emmanuel. Alright, so that's 700 years before Jesus came. This was written about 700 BC, which means before Christ ever came. So that was written, and then guess what? In Matthew, in the New Testament, after Jesus actually came, guess how he came? Matthew tells us, all this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet, talking about Isaiah. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call his name Emmanuel, which means God with us. He came exactly that way. And so we have all of these prophecies through the Bible that describe these minute details about how Christ would come and what would happen, and every single one came true. Now, if you were trying to guess what would happen 1,000 years from now, let's say you were just going to paint a picture of what cars would look like 1,000 years from now. How close do you think you'd get to what an actual car would look like 1,000 years from now? Let's say 100 years from now, could you even do that?
They'll be like covered.
Like 10 years ago, could you have envisioned an iPhone?
No. Yeah.
Like, no. Like, things change so fast, and yet this guy, over 1,000-year period, was able to write down in writing, so we knew it was then, Jesus would come exactly that way in 1,000 years, and he came that way. And so we have a bunch of prophecies. Let me read you just a couple of them. In Numbers, it was about 1,000 years before Christ, he says, a star and a scepter came out of Israel. Was there a star?
Yeah.
At all? What does a scepter stand for?
A scepter.
Kings hold scepters, right? Who's Christ?
No,
not quite a scepter. You're close though. And then Messiah was born of a virgin, okay, and called Emmanuel, which means God with us. We just read those two, Isaiah 7:14. He was born in Bethlehem. In Micah, the prophet Micah told of Jesus was going to be born in Bethlehem. Where was Jesus born? Yeah, the book of Matthew and Luke both tell us he was born in Bethlehem. How about that he was going to descend from the line of Jesse, or David, who was David's father, Jesse, and that the Spirit of the Lord would rest upon him? Isaiah told us that. And where did Jesus come from?
Jesse.
The line of Jesse, the line of David. You're right. Thank you. Good. Whew. The Lord, not for you, but for everybody else. You're smart. Okay. The Lord raised up a great prophet, it says in Deuteronomy. He would raise up a great prophet. What do they call Jesus in the New Testament? Who is he? He's the prophet, the priest, and the king. And so, I could go on and on and on about very specific details about Christ's birth that were given thousands of years before he ever came. And every single one has been fulfilled, and we can see it in the New Testament. And so that should tell you something special, because so many religions talk about like special children that would be born and anointed and prophecies and all this craziness, and all of them look forward to it happening, and that's how they hook you. That's how they get you to say, oh, it might happen, it might happen, it might happen. But you know what you can point to as a believer in Jesus Christ? I have truth right here that this actually happened. And it didn't just happen on one little teeny occasion that he got lucky. It happened in many, many, many ways. Where 1,000 years before he ever came, they said this is how it would happen, and it did. And you can stand on that as a foundation to point someone right back in their face and say, nope, Christ is real. This stuff actually happened. And so we're looking and we're talking about someone who's real. Not some little fake little baby in a little manger scene that you put up in your table in Christmas time. He actually came. Alright, so let's look at Isaiah 9:6. That's our passage for tonight. It says, for to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace. And so the first thing he says right there is, for to us a child is born. How awesome are those first three words? For to us. Like, this is for you and for me. This whole thing, everything Christ did, everything God did there, he did it for us. He gave us something special. He says, a child is born. You know, he could have probably done it a bunch of different ways. I mean, I don't know, I'm not God. But he chose to pour himself out into a little baby and then be born, just like you were born. Just like you were born, just like I was born. And then not just that, but this verse is telling us that he became a man just like you and me. So Jesus probably stubbed his toe. He probably got colds. He probably, who knows, he went through all the same stuff you do. Why would the God of the universe, who's above all of that, want to have a sick stomach and a headache and, I don't know, all the other things that we go through every single day? Why would he subject himself to that? But yet he says, for to us a child is born. Like, he chose to be a man just like you so he could relate to you. so that he could say, hey, look, I've gone through all of this. And Hebrews 4:15 says this, listen, for we don't have a high priest who's unable to empathize or relate with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. He came to prove something. He did it that way to prove to us that he can beat sin, that he could become a perfect man and show you it can be done, but you know what? We can't anymore because we're fallen. But he came and he was perfect. And so he did what we weren't able to do. And so he had to be a man. And he had to prove that. And so as he came as a man, he lived just like you and me. And he went through the same stuff that we did. But you know what? That doesn't mean he was just a man. Some people are going to try to tell you, that Jesus, yeah, he's just a guy, some dude, just in the history book. He's not really God. You know that Jesus was 100% man. He really was. But he was also 100% God. Whew. How can you have 200% of something? Any math people in here? You guys really good at math? Can you have 200% of one thing? No. It makes your mind go in short circuits. Because once you have like a pie, you fill up the whole pie, right? And then it's done. It's there. But then to have more than what it already is, and then my mind goes, and I'm not good at math anyway, so whoa, it turns into mush. But he was both at the same exact time. That's like saying, here is a red Ferrari, but this red Ferrari is also a yellow Porsche at the exact same time. Go figure. God can do that. He's that big. He's that awesome. He can make it both at the exact same time. Whoa. He's big. And yet Jesus came, and he was completely man, but yet he was completely God. And if you can figure that out, please come tell me, because I still can't. I'm amazed that my God is that big. He's that awesome. So Jesus came, and he was both. And so he says, for unto us a child is born. And then he says, for unto us a son is given. Here he doesn't say child anymore. He switches over and he says a son. Well, the first time, didn't he say child? How come he didn't say a son the first time?
Could that be the same thing?
Could be, but it's not. He specifically chose two different words. The first time he just says a child. Because, yes, he was a child. He was a human just like us. But whose son was he really? God's son. So in the second part, he says a son is given. Mary couldn't have actually had Jesus, the God part of Jesus, on her own. He was something much bigger than just a human baby. He was literally the Son of God. And God had to actually give him miraculously to Mary through the virgin birth. Because he was bigger than just some man. He was bigger than just some guy who lived a cool life and did a lot of cool things and sacrificed himself for us. He was bigger than that. He was the actual Son of God. And so he had to be given to us. Because we weren't worthy. Because we couldn't have done that. And you know what else? Because it's all about God's glory. We look at the Bible sometimes and we think, yep, God did everything for us. We're the center of this whole thing. He loves us. It's all about us. This whole thing is about us. And the whole Bible is about God's glory. If you listen to Pastor Titus this Sunday, he talked about how everything God does is for His glory. And we like to put ourselves in the center and say, God does it for us and our glory. No, everything God does is for His own glory because He's worthy of it and we're not. And so when Jesus came, He came to die and save us. But you know what the main goal was in that, in doing all of that? To glorify God. Because He deserves the glory, not us. And so we know this because look at Luke 2:13-14. Okay? I'm going to paint the scene for you. They're all chilling out there. The shepherds are out there. And all of a sudden, they're hanging with their sheep, and they're like, bah, you know, and they're like hanging out, and they're probably stinking all this stuff, and they're like talking and chilling. It's kind of dark, whatever. All of a sudden, these angels pop out of the sky, and they're like, listen, verse 13. And suddenly, a great company of heavenly hosts, that's angels, appeared with the angel that's talking to him. It says, praising God, and saying, glory to God in the highest heaven, and on earth peace to those in whom His favor rests. These angels came, and you know what they said? Not, yay for man, yay, good job, man, you're going to be saved, it's all about you. They came and they said, glory to God. The whole story is about Him. He came to save you, so give Him the glory for it. He came to save you, so guess what? Let's all praise Him. They said, praising God. So the whole point of the Bible always points back to Jesus. Every part of it. Even stories about Moses, stories about Abraham. Every single piece of that Bible whispers the name Jesus Christ. And if you come to church on Sunday mornings, Pastor Titus is going to go more into that with you. How the whole Bible is talking about Jesus. The whole Bible points to God. It's His love letter to us, but guess what? Its main focus is God. And so, these angels are just glorifying God. It says, unto us a son is given. And so we know here that He's not just some man. He's God. He's bigger than some little baby. He's the God of the universe in a manger. Alright, and then it says, and the government will be on His shoulders. So at first you're like, whoa, what does that mean? Is He like going to become the next president? Like, goodbye Obama, hello? Jesus is like, what's going on? Wow, I guess I am in the South. Note to self, don't say that in Florida. Okay, you got me distracted. I don't even know where I am now. You're so unruly. All right, so He basically, what this is saying here, the government is on His shoulders. All of the ruling of the world, everything is going to now depend on Jesus. He has become the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. We could today, basically what this language would say is that He's the President of Presidents, the Boss of Bosses, the Manager of Managers. He is the last, the end all of everything. Jesus Christ now is what everything revolves around. Why do you think that would be? What has He come to do?
He's come to save.
He came to save us, and by giving His blood, what has He done?
Sacrifice.
He sacrificed. He's bought us. He's bought everything with His sacrifice for us. So guess who owns it? Jesus. He owns everything. So why would the government rest on His shoulders? Why would He be the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords? He's the owner of everything that exists because He sacrificed Himself to buy it all, to purchase it all so that God wouldn't destroy it, so that we could live on. I'll get you right after, okay? All right. And then he goes on, and I love these. Isaiah describes Jesus and what He is, and the roles and things that He does, and he says, and He will be called Wonderful Counselor. You know that, what does a counselor do when you like go to like sit down and you talk? What?
He talks the whole time.
Yeah. Actually, counselors don't talk a lot.
How do you feel about that?
How do you feel about that? You guys have very jaded views. I see the media has done a great job with you. Hello.
The counselor helps you work out the kinks in your life.
Yeah. Helps you work out the kinks. He kind of gives you direction. Helps you figure stuff out. Well, this is saying that Jesus is the Wonderful Counselor. The Wonderful Counselor. So Christ basically has come so that we can know a direction. Because without Jesus, can we know any truth at all? Pretty much no. We can't know anything. But Christ has come and He's giving us purpose. He's giving us a meaning to live, a purpose for our lives, and He gives us direction. Without Christ, there's no truth. Truth, basically, what the world wants to tell you today when you watch TV is follow your heart. Right? You hear that all the time? Just follow your heart.
Yes.
The Bible says that your heart is basically the worst thing you could possibly follow. It's deceitful above all things, it says in Proverbs. And so, are we going to want to follow our heart? Because if we do that, truth is whatever we want it to be. But Jesus came, and all of a sudden we have a bearing on truth, and we can say, Christ is truth. And so when you're wandering around wondering, what is my life about? Why am I here? What is my purpose for living? Does anybody even love me? All of a sudden, thank you. All of a sudden, Jesus Christ, you can point right to Him and say, look, He's my truth. He's my purpose. He's my meaning. He has found me worthy enough to die for me. And so my truth is found in Him. And so He's the Wonderful Counselor. My brother, I'm sorry. My brother and I were on, it was a Halloween, I think, and we're like in his car, and we got ice creams, and we're eating ice creams. He's driving me around. I was just a little guy. And he's driving me around, and he's like, it's Halloween, so I'm going to try to scare you. Let's do something scary. And I'm like, all right, sweet. So we see, yeah, it was kind of a silent, it was a cemetery. We see this big cemetery we're driving by, and it's already dark, and we're eating our ice cream, and he's like, let's pull in there. So we pull in, and he's driving me through, and we're going through the cemetery really slow in his car. And I'm like driving through, and he's like trying to like do the spooky noises to scare me. He's like, wah, and he's like, woo, and I'm like, all right, knock it off now. And so I'm starting to get a little nervous because it's dark, and like the gravestones look all freaky, and there's like shadows from the big trees, and there's like crazy looking birds. I'm like, oh, dude, this is getting kind of creepy. And so as we drive through, he's completely cool. He's calm, cool, and collected because all he wants to do is scare me. He's like, there's nothing wrong. So we go through, and he does his job. He scares me, and we're driving out, and we pull back. And we get to back to the gate, it's closed and locked. So we must, and I'm like, oh no. So he gets out and he looks at the sign and it says closes at 9:30. We look at the clock, it's like 9:32. And we're like, oh no, we just got locked into a cemetery. So he's like, no, all right, let's try to get to the other gate because there were a couple gates. So we're trying to like beat whoever's there that's locking all the gates. And we're like rushing through to beat the gardener. And he's like driving, he's trying to find the next gate, but we don't know where it is because there's like all these roads. You ever been in a cemetery? There's roads that go everywhere and they end up at like these crazy gravestones. And we're like driving, a dead end, literally dead end in the cemetery. And so we stop at another one and we get to the next gate. Finally we find it locked already. So we're like, dude. So we go through all three gates. There's one gate left. We have no idea where this gate is. We don't even know which ones we've been to, okay? So we start driving. My brother's so nervous, he takes his ice cream. He chucks it out the window, you know? It hits like a gravestone. Some poor dead lady's like, boom. It's like ice cream all over a gravestone. And so we're driving out. And we were scared out of our mind. And one thing I remember, this is what I remember from that story, is that as we drove around, I had completely lost direction. I had no idea where we were anymore. Like up and down and left and right and gates, and I have no idea. We're just driving randomly. It's dark, and I was completely lost. And as we pulled up to this last little road, we could see the light and the gate. The guy was literally there closing the gate, about to close it. And when I saw that gate, it was like, phew, we made it. And I felt relieved. And sometimes I feel in life that so many people are walking through life and they're completely lost. They don't even know why they're here. And Jesus is that light. To know that you have a God who made you. He has a reason for you to be alive. He gives you purpose. And He loves you more than anything in the world. And all of a sudden, this wonderful counselor gives us direction in life. And that's what Jesus is. This is the Jesus, the Messiah that Isaiah was prophesying about. And then he calls Him Mighty God. Man, I'm glad that God is mighty. You know, if we serve some little God that was like a little wooden thing like they used to do back then, that you could be like, break, you know, like, what good is that? You pray to Him and like nothing happens. We don't serve a God like that. We serve a mighty God. And basically Isaiah said He's bigger than any of your problems. And some of you guys are sitting here right now and you're thinking, man, He doesn't know what kind of problems I have. Because I got some big problems. He doesn't know what's going on in my family. He doesn't know that my loved one is about to pass away. He doesn't know. And then you could just go down the list of all the horrible things that are in your life, and you're saying, God doesn't know how big my problems are. And Isaiah says, you know what? He's a mighty God. He's bigger than any problem that you have. He's bigger than any fear in your heart, any pain you might be going through. And when He gives you direction as a wonderful counselor in your life, He doesn't just say, hey, go there. He's a mighty God. And He comes alongside you and gives you the power to do it, because alone you couldn't. Alone you wouldn't have the power to ever do what He tells you, or to follow Him, or to make the right choices. But you don't have a God that leaves you alone. You've got a God that carries you through it, because He's a mighty God. That same brother I was telling you about, he took me to the cemetery. A couple years later, he gave us a call on the phone. And he had to go to the hospital, and he got out of the hospital. And the doctors had told him that he had a brain tumor. Right on his brainstem. And so he had to go back in over and over for all these tests. And the doctors had, what they do is they go in and they cut a little piece out to see if it's growing or not. And it was growing, and they didn't know how much longer he'd have. So they had to go in there and kind of cut the whole thing out. And they said it probably wouldn't even work even if they did that. And so time went by and he had to go in for a surgery, and we just waited for the details. And I remember my mom told me to get on the phone, and we all got on our phones and we called everybody from our church. We called people all over the place that we knew, and we said, please just pray for him. And I remember spending all night awake with my family, and we prayed for my brother all night long. We didn't sleep at all that night. The next day we like sat around shaking, waiting for the results. And the next day his wife calls us, my sister-in-law, and she says, you know what? They went in there, they did the surgery, and when they opened it up, there was nothing they could do because it was gone. It was literally gone. They don't know why. They looked in there and there were nerves that were all broken from where it had been growing. There was like scar tissue. There's all sorts of stuff in there. But the cancer itself was completely gone. And I can't tell you how that happened today. And I don't think my brother could ever tell you. But I can tell you this. Our God is mighty. But you know what? Even if our God had not healed my brother, he still would have been a mighty God. Even if my brother had passed away the next day, my God would still be mighty. Because he knows what we need. He's bigger than cancer. He's bigger than life and death. And whether things work out the way we think they should or not, he's still big. And he's still mighty. And then Isaiah goes on and he says, he's the everlasting Father. Wow. I was sitting in my office not too long. It was a couple years ago. My office wasn't over here, but it was over there. And I was talking to a student who sat down with me and basically crying, told me this. I was with my dad the other night. I barely get to see him. His parents were divorced. And he looked at me and said, you know what? I just can't take it anymore. I said, well, what happened? My dad looked at me last night and he told me that I am a worthless piece of trash and that he basically wasted his whole life on me. And he wished he had never wasted his life on me. And I cried with him. And you know, even when our own families aren't there for us, even when the people that we love so much break promises or lie or hurt us, we have an everlasting Father who does not change. For all of eternity, he loves you. He will always love you. He will never break a promise to you. He will never take his word back. And he will never view you as trash. He loves you so much. And Isaiah says he is your everlasting Father. And this Jesus, this Messiah, this Prince of Peace that Isaiah calls him finally there, when he does all this for you, there is a peace in your heart knowing that he will love you for all of eternity. This is why we celebrate Christmas. This is the good news that we talk about when we talk about Christmas. And so I hope your view of Christmas changes tonight. That it's not just about that. That's fun. And some good stuff can happen in that tradition, around that tree. But remember that the center of it's not the tree, the center of it is Jesus. This guy right here that loves you so much. Make him the center of your Christmas. Will you pray with me? Oh God, we have so much to be thankful for. There's so much that you do for us every single day. You've come to be like us, to die for us. You didn't have to do that. And you saved us. And you will always be here for us. We want to thank you tonight and tell you how much we love you, God. Grab the hearts of every person in this room and remind us that you are the reason that we celebrate. Not just one day a year, but every single day. Let it be Christmas in our hearts because you are with us. And that's the greatest news we could ever hear. We love you, Jesus. In your name, amen.